day, Johnny Allen was fishing for the White Sox then.
Who was that?
Johnny Allen.
Was he ever with the White Sox?
Oh, yes, he was over the White Sox.
Before he came to Cleveland?
That's all right.
Yeah.
No, he wasn't with it. He wasn't with it. Who was he with? He was somebody. But anyway, he was pitching. And Johnny would throw spitballs.
Uh-huh.
He'd throw a ball up close to a fellow's chin, you know, and he'd yell, "Look out!" And everybody in the park would look ready to hit him. And he'd reach up and get his spit.
Oh, so, boy.
We were yelling at the umpires and look at the ball, and they got all upset and mad about it. I was with the White Sox, and Allen was with Cleveland.
Yeah, that's right.
He was with Cleveland. We were playing in Cleveland. And so Lyon says, "Oh," he says, "don't get upset." He says, "I'll throw the spitball." I said, "All right." So we went out and baseball, Lyon, he said, "Well, didn't cover it up here, wet it, throw it up." Averill hit the screen. First ball, first spitball pitch in Cleveland. So Trotsky was up next. Went the ball this way, threw it to Trotsky, and Trotsky hit it against that wall so hard that it bounced back, and the second baseman picked it up, and Averill couldn't go to third. This is the old Cleveland ball.
Wow.
And Vosmick was the third man up, and he waited again. He threw it up to Vosmick on the first pitch, and Vosmick hit it off the wall down in right center for three bases. Lyon says...
Lyon went back to his regular...
He held his hand up, and he went like that there and went out. He says to me, "The hell with that spitball."
That must have been quite a guy.
Oh, he was.
Yeah.
When I went over there, he'd hurt his arm, but he didn't have much stuff.
Yeah.
Great competitor.
Oh, yeah. George Yulee yesterday mentioned that he and Ted hooked up once in a 21-inning game. They both went the distance.
That's right. Pitched a long time.
George finally was the winner, but he didn't pitch the last inning because they pinch hit for him. Or he got on and they put in a pinch runner or something. Oh, that's it. He said, "I got five hits against Lyons in that game."
George
could hit. Yeah, boy, he did. Now, when you went to Washington in 33, were you traded over there?
Yes, I was traded.
For whom?
Roy Spencer, the catcher.
Yeah. Not much of a catcher compared to you. But
well, Brad and myself got it a little odd deal. I had a contract with Bill Evans. If I caught so many, I'd taken a cut in salary the year before.
Mm-hmm.
I had an agreement with Bill Evans that if I caught so many games, over 100 games, that I at least wouldn't be cut for next year. Mm-hmm. He shook hands on it. And then in the fall of the year, around the 1st of November, I got a letter from Bradley that he was going to cut my salary in half. In half. Wow. So I went up to see him, and I said, "Mr. Bradley," I said, "I had an agreement with Bill Evans, who's a business manager. If I caught 100 games last year, there'd be no reduction in my salary." Well, he said, "Evans is not having the contract this year. I am." Evans had gone to Europe. He'd stayed over there about 2 months, I guess, to get out of this.
Yeah, so he wouldn't be around when that was happening, yeah.
So we got it locked ahead. He traded into Washington.
Well, you got into the World Series there in Washington.
We got in.
Yeah.
Got a bunch of old broken down ball players, and most of them had good years.
Yeah, that's what it takes.
Mm-hmm.
We got Joe Kuehl.
Harry Meyer.
Joe Cronin.
Cronin, Bluji.
Bluji, Goslin, Manush, Sam Rice, who had
Schulte
to be toward the end of the
match.
Yeah, Schulte. And Mo Berg was around.
Mo didn't do much. He never did much catch.
Oh,
Mo was
a linguist.
He called him our politician. He kept everybody smooth off.
And you had some pretty good pitchers, Whitehill and General Crowder and
Stewart,
exactly. And
Marty Weaver.
Yep.
Jack Russell did a lot of good for us that year. Mm-hmm. He was a relief pitcher for us. Did an awful lot of good.
Did news to me. My memory tells me, did Hubble win two games in that series?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So we never did.
Never solved him. But.
Well, I hit the ball pretty good on it, but our fellas at the power hitters didn't do anything. Yeah. Just struck them all out. But you had to get it way in front of the plate on Hubble.
Yeah.
If you was put up in front of the plate.
Screw ball.
Yes. Huh? Oh, brother, he had a good one.
Yeah. He had the best
fellas. They were all hard hitters, and they'd stand back when the ball would come over the plate. And the time they got to it, it'd be down to the ankle.
That's what Ruth and all the others found out in the All-Star game the next year.
Right.
Yeah. Five in a row.
He was a good pitcher.
How did some of their other players impress you? Terry and Ott and Travis Jackson?
Well, I can tell you, I have to say they impressed us tremendously because they walked us good.
They sure did, yeah.
Yeah, they had a good ball
club. They had a good ball club and a younger club, I think, than yours.
Well, they were more consistent than the players were. See, our players, won the thing, had about a week to go. Wouldn't cinch the pennant. Everybody let down.
That bad.
They never could come back.
But
most of our older players all had exceptional years.
Uh-huh. But then the next year, they didn't have a good year.
Everybody got hurt on the club. Mm-hmm. I got a finger broken. The doctors never did get it set. It's the only injury I came out of baseball.
Oh, for goodness sakes.
It's broken the joint. I can't bend it.
I can see that.
And I got hurt in spring training. Joe Kerr, broken ankle. Buddy Myers, I think he broke something. I see Cronin broke a wrist.
Hmm.
Red shooter broke something. By golly.
That's almost unheard.
I played every position on the team that year except shortstop and pitch. Cronin got out.
They show that exactly.
Huh?
They show you catcher, outfield, first base, third base, and second base.
That's right.
Yeah.
I played every position.
Except shortstop and pitching.
That's right. Well, Griff, you know, you could write a book on Griff alone.
I'm sure.
And he was keeping about, I have four or five families out of that ball club. This is during the Depression years. You had to appreciate after it was all over with.
Sure.
I've told somebody the story, you know, normally when they win a pennant, they pop champagne and
mm-hmm.
they have a great time. We cinched the pennant. And Uncle Billy Smith was he was an old friend of Griff's. Griff had him handling concessions. Billy had one of the concession boys. They came in with this orange pop that made it under the stand.
Yeah.
Came in with two cases of it, two.
Yeah.
So this is from Griff. We cinched the pennant. The Griff's.
Well,
he couldn't afford anything else.
Yeah. If you were taking care of families that needed it,
he had a brother and had an uncle, Billy Smith,
mm-hmm.
and had Calvin Cronin's wife's family, her whole family, and his brother, he had a brother in there with a family. Yeah. He had about five families he was keeping. I guess
he wasn't really as pinch-penny as Calvin, was he? Or is Calvin really that way?
Well, I don't know much about Calvin. Calvin just, I think he's just gotten to the point that he just can't compete with these financiers.
Money guys.
But Griff, he'd argue with you about a penny.
Yeah.
I've told, it's about the time that air conditioning was coming in on the trains,
mm-hmm.
and they had lockers under the Pullman, one at each end, and they put in six blocks of 300-pound blocks of ice, blew a fan over it, and that fan would come through safely.
Sure.
So it was hot riding those things, and we'd have to ride from Washington to St. Louis, and Washington to Chicago. we were at the Griff to get us some air conditioned cars. No, says bad for pitcher's arms. Says terrible for pitcher's arms. It's the worst thing you can do. So we're going to ride in the middle of the summer. The temperature was about 100. We're going from Washington to St. Louis, and that's 22 hours. Come down through southern Ohio, yeah, out through Indianapolis.
Yeah.
So we got to Griff, and we said, Griff, if you let us have air-conditioned cars, we'll pay for the ice. Well, he said, why don't we try it?
You made him a deal, yeah, that he could go for it.
Oh, yes, he'd give it a try if we'd buy it.
Yeah.
And he had ice about four times going out.
I bet. Now, when you went over to the White Sox, were you traded?
Yes, I was traded to St. Louis. I was on the St. Louis roster. I don't know what the deal was there, and then the White Sox picked me up from St. Louis. It was in the winter.
Yeah.
The deal was in the winter. Griff thought this broken finger I'd never play again.
Uh-huh.
He knew it was.
You had a good year with the Sox in your first season there, hitting 285.
I'll tell you a good story on that. Al Simmons was there.
Yeah.
He looked this up and he'd go back home. I hit Al Simmons that year.
My golly, that's something.
And Simmons said, the league is upside down when you're out hitting me. You look it up, look at your record.
I will, yeah. Yeah, you had Simmons and Mule Haas and Zeke Benura and Luke Appling, Lyons, Sad Sam Jones, and Johnny Whitehead. Now, tell me, was that Whitehead's first year in the majors?
Yes, he came up won 6 or 7 straight games.
I thought my memory told me he won 8 straight, but maybe it didn't. But a year ago, when Valenzuela won his first 8 starts as a rookie, they were ballyhooing it all over. The first time it had been done since Boo Ferris did it for the Red Sox. And that may still be true, because I can't remember. Boo came up later in the 40s.
Boo was up later.
Yeah, but I'll bet you Whitehead was 8-0.
He was up there, though, because I remember the writers came to me and
said,
is this fellow for real? And I said, so far he is.
But he hadn't eaten so much, he might have been.
Well, he drank too.
Yeah.
He was a bottom man.
Yeah.
He'd take a bottle of gin, go to bed. With
oh, golly. Son of a gun.
Just too bad.
And Sad Sam was about at the end of his stream.
He was through. Yeah. He knew it.
Yeah. Then you had Monty Stratton.
Monty was a good young pitcher.
He would have been a fine pitcher.
Oh, he would have.
Yeah. Was Vernon Kennedy like as a pitcher?
Well, he was just an average pitcher.
Yeah.
He had pretty good stuff. Didn't have much of a period ball. Control wasn't too good at the time. He had one good year for us and won 19 or 20 games.
How about Thornton Lee?
Thornton was an average left-hander. Mm-hmm. He wasn't an outstanding.
No.
They got him from Cleveland on waivers.
Yeah.
Harry Grabner came to me. I don't know if he was worth the price. And I said, yes, bring him over. And also Clint Brown, I was a relief pitcher. I got to get him.
Well, he was better with the Sox as a relief pitcher than he had been over at Cleveland.
Well, they tried to start him.
Yeah.
And I was with him at Cleveland. He'd pitch you about three or four pretty good innings.
Yeah.
And then the second time they got a look at him, they'd hit him. Yeah. He'd go about 4 innings.
That's all you need out of a relief pitcher.
That's right. And he did real good weight loss.
Johnny Rigney.
Johnny came up just about the time I was leaving.
Yeah, his first year was your last.
That's right, and he developed into a pretty good pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
But he married him, and his daughter didn't have to pitch anymore.
All right, now then when you went back to Cleveland, 39.
Well,
you had Oscar Vitt as manager, I think.
That's right, but now you see Brooklyn claim me in between there. I went to spring training with Brooklyn.
So twice in your career you changed teams.
Changed teams
in the winter and never played with them.
Larry McPhail called me up one night, or one morning, called me up one afternoon. It was in the winter, in January. He says, I just bought you a contract from the White Sox. I said, Larry, I said, what are you taking me for? I said, I'm through. No, he said, I have plans for you. And he wanted me to meet him in Cleveland. No, yes. Meet him in Detroit. And he was on his way to Chicago. No, he was on his way to Battle Creek. He had a mother somewhere there. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to talk about this. DeRocher, first year manager. DeRocher and myself had been at odds for a few years. I met him in Detroit, got on the train, went out with him, and I told him, I said, Larry, I said, I won't finish spring training with you. I said, I'll do anything in the world. But what he wanted me to, he says, one thing I have, two things I have set up here. We had a pitcher named Red Evans they had bought from Nashville. Evans was a bottle man. I was to room with Evans and then teach Babe Phelps to catch. Babe could hit.
Yes.
But he didn't know which hand to catch the ball with.
Yeah.
So we went to Hot Springs and I roomed with Evans. Talked to him a lot about he could make this club in the big leagues if he just stay out. Well, he was through with that bottle and everything. And I left there driving to Florida, to Clearwater. And the night I left, he went out and didn't come in. So there was that experiment went right forward.
Yeah.
And I got to spring training and they gave me Babe Phelps to teach him to catch. Honest, this is as true as Babe would catch batting practice and the trouble with the catchers all the day, they give a signal like this and they catch the ball going down.
Right.
And then it goes down and they pick it up and they take it. Uh-huh. And wind up and take a hop, skip, and jump, and the fellas run four steps on it.
That's right. At least.
That's why all of the base stealing is going on.
Mm-hmm.
It is going. The pitchers, all the pitchers got to do is stop them.
Yep.
Just don't give them the running start.
That's right.
And then if you catch it this way, you're right in position to throw it. Well, I was trying to get Babe had this way. He'd just knock them all down. And I was trying to get Babe to use the mitt this way and come up.
Yep.
And Babe would give him the... He'd put the mitt down in batting practice, and they'd swing at the ball, and it would hit him on his hand sometimes. Then he'd touch the mitt, they wouldn't foul it anything, and he'd come dancing out of there. So I said to him one day, I said, Babe, just put the mitt down and put your other hand behind you. Put it behind you. And I said, try it that way for a while. On the first ball pitch, somebody fouled it. It hit the batting cage up here someplace, went back, carried him back there. You know where it hit him? Right on that head.
That's incredible.
And I got to laughing. Yoshi got so mad because I laughed at Babe.
Yeah.
What are you trying to do, make a joke out of this spring training?
Mm-hmm.
But I stayed there, and they released me back in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came over to Greece.
You came back to some pretty good players, Trotsky, Keltner, Hemsley, Feller, Johnny Allen.
Yeah, well, one reason I came back in there, they had Frankie Pitlack and Hemsley.
Uh-huh.
And as long as they could keep Hemsley sober.
That's right, he was a great catcher.
Oh, he'd have been tremendous.
Yeah.
But he'd just catch so long, and then he just couldn't resist it.
Yeah.
Well, they put Pitlack in. Pitlack was a little fella, a good little catcher, but he wasn't as good as Hemsley. So when Hemsley could get him sobered up, they'd put him back, and Pitlack would go home. He'd go to Buffalo. So they had to send Bill Bradley, the old third baseman.
Mm-hmm.
Bill was a scout for him. They'd send Bill over. He'd bring Frankie back. Well, they got me as a player coach.
Yeah.
And this put the rule in. Frankie would go home, they'd put me on the active list.
Yeah.
And I caught a few games around it, two or three, I don't know what it meant.
It says 15.
Well, that's probably right. So they get Frankie back, and mm-hmm. they put me back on as a coach, see? And mm-hmm. they moved me back about four or five times, and they put the rule in that you could only move them up and back once. That's why the rule went in.
Oh, I got mistakes.
But they had a pretty good ball club.
Yeah.
And could have won the pennant in,
yes,
in 39, I guess.
Joe tells me about a rule that they...
What can we do for you?
Nothing. It's fine. I went over to the tag sale.
Oh, you did? What'd you buy?
Well, I just looked around. You know how it is? We've all gotten rid of a lot of things. I didn't know what I wanted to accumulate anymore.
Well, if I'd have known you were looking for things, I'd have sent you down to the basement. You could have bought right
through. I could just a U-Haul truck and just run
yeah.
right out. Now, you know, those kind of sales always attract women.
Joe said one time in a crucial moment, somebody laid down a perfect bunt when Joe was playing third base, I guess for the Yankees. And it was rolling right along the line. They're never going to get anybody. So he took his spikes, I think, and dug a trench and made it run foul.
He copied it from, what's his name in Detroit?
Cal?
No.
Cal was
no,
later.
The fellow used to play shortstop there. He did that in the World Series, the first time it was done.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. He ran over the line, and he looked at the ball, he just took his spike, he just drug a trench and hit it.
Right on out.
Right on out.
I've done that with cocaine.
Yeah.
Now, then you go over to the Browns in 41 to manage.
Yes, well.
And you got the distinction being the only person that ever won a pennant with the St. Louis Browns.
That's right. I was offered the Cleveland Club in 1940 three times. They were having a lot of player managers.
With Vitt, yeah.
And three times Bradley in the board of directors. They finally told me, he said, "You've got to take that down." And I said, "In New York was the last time." I said, "I haven't got to take it."
Yeah, that's right.
And I said, "Well, now, what's going to happen to Oscar?" They said, "We're going to put him in a sanitarium." And I said,
No.
I said, "You couldn't think of a thing like that." Well, he said, "What are you going to do?" I said, "If that's your decision, I've got to take the club. I'm going home." And we were in New York, a hotel. Oh, he says, "Don't do that." Then I told him, I said, "Well, let me ask you a question." I said, "If we can stay in this pennant race until the last week of the season, would you people be satisfied?" "Oh," he said, "definitely." And I said, "We'll be there."
You did, yeah.
Oh, yes.
What up to the last day?
2 days before, I think.
Was it?
That's right.
Wasn't that the time when the rookie from Detroit beat you?
Beat fella.
Yeah.
2-0.
2-0. Something guy, Guy Bell. His name was.
Yeah, I forgot his name.
Gable. Gable.
Yeah. Gable. Gable. Yeah. G-I-E-B-L-L. That's right.
This is.
Go over and see it. Go see your friend. Go over and see
it. One of the two games he won in the major leagues, I think. That one. Yeah.
He beat fella 2-0.
Well.
I went over. I was living at home, had a good contract coaching in Cleveland. Living here, but mm-hmm. here every day.
Yeah.
I was thinking about giving up baseball anyway. So Bradley himself called me and said, "Don Barn wants to talk to you about managing the Browns." Well, it was, you never saw such a misfit
outfit. Right,
oh, yes. Yeah. And I told him, I said, "Mr. Bradley, I'm satisfied right where I am." "No," he said, "you work to yourself." I go over and talk to him. And I went over, and after talking with him for a while, and they gave me every answer, everything that I asked in the affirmative,
mm-hmm.
and I couldn't turn it down. Yeah.
Well, now, while you were there, did Bill Beck come in as the owner?
No,
that was later. That was
later,
in the 50s.
It was quite a bit. It was, okay. Beck didn't come in there until about...
In the 50s, I guess. Early.
48 or 49. Yeah. 48, I guess.
Yeah.
No, he was there. That's right. Because he was in Cleveland when he tried to get me to come back to Cleveland as a coach.
Uh-huh.
And he got Bill McKechnie out there. He said, Pedro's first year of managing.
Yeah.
And he said he needs a lot of help. He got Bill McKechnie to come in. I told him I didn't want to. I'd quit then.
Yeah.
I'd quit baseball.
I remember vividly listening on the radio to the last game of that 44 season. Well, it was 44 when you won the pennant. And Chet Labs hit a home run.
Two
of them. And who was your pitcher? Was that?
Jakuki.
Sig Jakuki. Yep. And you gave the Cardinals a pretty fair run for their money in the series.
Well, we actually had a chance winning that series.
Yeah, I see that.
If we'd have won the second game, we made six misplays on one butted ball.
Good, great. That's got to be a record.
And it tied our score.
Yeah.
And they beat us out in the 11th inning.
Yeah.
They had a punt. They had a man on first. They were a run behind. No, they had two runs back. Somebody, pitcher by a breather, was butted the ball. And Potter was pitching and Mark Chrisman at third, and they ran up, and instead of either one could have caught the ball, they looked at each other and let the ball drop. That's one misery. Potter got a hold of the ball and he got it up in his arms. See, instead of picking it up clean, he got it here and got the fumbling with it. That's his second one.
Yeah.
And little Don Guttridge went over, he was covering first, and he had fingers about this long. And he was trying to keep his foot on the bag and reach for the ball, and it just went off of the tip.
Off the end.
Well, that's the third one. Chet Labb was playing right field. No, that's the fourth one.
Yeah.
Chet Labb was playing right field. He goes down, it carried off the wall, and he gets down through his legs.
Oh,
that's the fifth one. He picked it up, threw it over the second baseman's head, and the fellow went to third base. That's the sixth one. Scored the tying run to beat us in the 11th inning.
Oh, boy.
I'll have to tell you a good story about that game. My mother, we were raised in Alabama, country people, country boy. My father was a country doctor down there. She was about as interested in baseball as I am in moon play. So I had her come up. I said, you've got to come. Probably the only time. So I brought her up. I had her ticket, I got her a driver, limousine, put a park right outside, and got her a seat right by an exit. And I said, now when you get tired, he'll take you home. And I told him, you take her back to the apartment.
Mm-hmm.
I got a rocking chair, she liked to rock. Brought her a rocking chair, and I said, well, you take her back, and you come on back and watch the game. Well, after the game was over, well, you know, you're sitting there, but I guess you're feeling sorry for yourself, bemoaning the fact that you lost it, should have won it. It took me an hour to get back down to the apartment. I walked up to my mother, and she was rocking away, just having a lot of fun. I put my arm on her shoulder. And I said, Mom, what'd you think of that game? Well, she says, I was awfully glad when it was over because I was getting mighty tired.
She's working hard.
It didn't bother her at all.
No, not a bit. No. Did you manage the Reds in 49-52?
No, I went over exactly the same deal that
McKechnie took at Cleveland.
McKechnie. Warren Giles, Bucky Walters was coming. Bucky was a fine pitcher and a great favorite down there.
Yeah.
And Giles, at heart, didn't think he'd make a manager, but he gave him the job. And then he got me to come down and help Bucky.
Mm.
And so I told him, I said, Warren always says, come on down. And he just kept going, and finally he offered me enough money, and I could have Mondays off, and I don't know what all. And I went down as a coach.
Yeah.
And poor Bucky got ulcers. We had the worst ball club that I ever ran into, even worse than the Browns.
Good gracious.
And it tried to kill Bucky.
Yeah.
He got ulcers from it, and he couldn't eat and couldn't sleep. We'd walk the streets at night, two or three or four in the morning, and he was just...
That's a pity.
So then the next year, they actually... He was trying to get Bill Terry. Bill had an automobile agency in Jacksonville, Florida. He offered Bill the job, and Bill said, well, he said, I might take it. It'd be a great thing for my automobile franchise down here. That's how it jives.
Yeah, yeah.
So then they got in touch with me. I went down there. I stayed 50, 51, and till about August of 52.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a terrible bar. Awful.
Too bad. Now, what's your greatest thrill in baseball?
I saw one play that thrilled me more than any other play.
What was that?
It was in 1944, the last game of the season. Oscar Grimes, we've got a game won 5-2, two men out in the ninth inning, and he popped a little pop fly outside of first base, about 50 or 75 feet high, and Joyce McQuinn went out and camped under it and caught it.
That did it.
That cinched the penalty.
Yeah, I was listening.
Well, that was the greatest thrill I ever had.
I can believe it.
And I came in, you know, you bouncing around. And Don Barnes, a little fellow, a vicious little fellow, owned the club. Mm-hmm. He was the president of the club. And he had a box right there, and he was just, I thought he was going to have a heart attack. He came over and said, "Luke, come over here." And tears running down. You never saw a man,
yeah.
You never saw a baby cry so.
Hmm.
Tears were just running down his face. Just, I never saw a man that was so emotional in any one sporting event.
Well, he had a certain right to be, huh?
Well, he
didn't have to overdo it like that, maybe. But.
Well, it was, he did it about as about as much as you could do.
What'd you do after 52? Do you have any further connection with baseball?
No, I quit. Then Branch Rickett called me. Jack Cook. You know Jack Kent? Cook?
Yeah, yeah.
He was on the forum all.
Yeah.
He was in Toronto at the time. And Jack was trying to get a major league franchise for Toronto. And
a little ahead of his day, but it finally got there.
He was whatever their city council is up there.
Yeah.
They had a fairgrounds pavilion out there. I think it's where the ballpark is now. I don't know whether it is or not. I haven't been there. Jack was saying to the council, "If you'll build me a ballpark there, I'll get a franchise." They said to him, "You get a franchise, we'll build you a ballpark there." And that's the way it stood. So Ricky got me and said, "They don't have anybody up there that's been around major leagues at all. Why don't you go up there?" He said, I can talk to Cook and said, maybe he'll get a major league franchise and said, something good will come out of this. And, so Cook called, and I met him in Atlanta, and we made a deal. Cook was like Steinbrenner. He'd come into the clubhouse and lecture his players, and those poor kids, some of them, you know, they didn't know the way home. He'd give him a pep talk and everything, and so I found that out. And I made a deal with him that he was to stay out of the clubhouse. Mm-hmm. I would handle all players.
Well, then he's not like Steinbrenner if you kept him out of the clubhouse.
He stayed out. He and we won that year, and we won the next year.
Mm-hmm.
Made him a lot of money. And I finally got him a franchise. It was at the time that the Athletics were still in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
Roy Mack, I ran into him in Rochester. And I said, "Roy, what are you people doing with your franchise?" He said, "We're trying to sell it." And Roy had 20% interest. Earl had 20% interest in the franchise. That was two boys by his first wife. And his second wife, he had Connie Jr. and a daughter. And his second wife, they owned the other 60.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, Earl, his mother and the other two would sell. He wanted to retain his 20%.
Yeah.
They owed the concessionaire Jacobs Brothers in
Philadelphia.
No, in Buffalo.
Mm.
They owed him $1.5 million.
Wow.
And he owed insurance company in Hartford, I forgot which one it was. No, he owed those fellows $1 million and the insurance company $1.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
And he owned the ballpark. But Bob Carpenter would buy the ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
So I got over to Buffalo and got to, I knew the Jacobs brothers, and they would take theirs out in concession.
Mm-hmm.
Carpenter would buy the ballpark enough to pay off the insurance company out, and it would cost him $600,000 to get the other 80%.
Yeah.
And he had his ballpark.
Yeah.
So I got back, I was bouncing.
Sounds like a great deal.
It was a great deal. So I got back and I said to Jack, got you a ballpark, and I went over it with him. And he had a cost accountant by the name of Neil Watt. He sent Neil down to go over the books. It looked like he butchered a few lambs in there. There's so much red. And Neil came back and wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. I told Jack, I said, Jack, you take the ball for a guy. I said, I'll go down and manage it for you next year. Now, you keep it a year. And if you don't get it up here, you can set it and make yourself some money.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have any money at the time. I had a partner. But he finally said to me, the Globe Mail, an estate owned it, and it was up for sale.
Mm-hmm.
Jack was in the publishing business up there.
Yeah.
He had revived a lot of, well, one of them was the Time magazine that had gone under, the Saturday Evening Post, and several of them, and he'd revived those things. And he said, this thing is coming up, it's going to be auctioned off this fall. And he said, I'm going to save all of my assets, and I'm going to bid on that Globe Mail.
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't take it.
Hmm.
So I'd made up my mind. At the same time, I'd been working for a rubber company for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
I was sitting in an office in October down in Alabama. Got a call, Mr. Cook from Toronto. It was in October. And he picked up the phone. Luke, he said, I lost the paper. I said, what? I said, what happened? Well, there was a fellow out of Toronto no one had ever heard of.
Outbid him.
Jack, it was appraised at $9 million. Jack bid $9.5 million, and the fellow in Toronto bid $10.5 million. And he was a fellow that gambled in these little cheap mining stocks.
Okay.
And there were no capital gains
on
stocks in Canada.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't got the paper. Jack came to the States and...
Yeah.
Well, I was through. Gabe Paul gets me to go out to Seattle on the same deal. They're looking for a major league franchise.
That's right.
It's Schick. Schick Brewers.
Yeah.
Old man Schick wanted the franchise. Go out there and help them see what you can do out there. Well, they come up and offered me a contract for more money than I'd ever made in baseball in my life to go out before. And I went out there and stayed around until about August. And when Sick got emphysema, he couldn't breathe. He kind of told me one day, I'm not going to put a nickel in baseball ever again.
Oh.
So I came home and quit.
That was the end of your baseball?
That's right, 56, about August of 56.
Then you came here about that time?
Oh, no, I've been living here since 1938 in this house.
Yeah, but you came back and went into the rubber people? Yeah.
Went in, I was in, I'd been in there.
You'd been in some,
yeah. About almost 15 years.
Year?
Huh?
Good year, nothing?
No, it was a little company. We had offices here in Akron, but the factories were down in the south, down at Muscle Shoals, Alabama.
Oh, yeah.
And they had one over in Georgia. We had two factories in Muscle Shoals. Mm-hmm. And I stayed with them a while.
You ever had any dealings with Unirom?
Have you
ever had any
dealings? Well, no, I know them well, but they're in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. This was a small rubber. We got into the rubber flooring, vinyl flooring industry, and had a tremendous business
going on
there.
Yeah.
When did you start that?
We started that in about 1948. The rubber and vinyl. We started rubber, I guess, in 47, and we started the vinyl. We had the vinyl market closed up until They didn't know, people didn't know how to make it.
That's about the year that Naugahyde came out.
Yes. People didn't know how to make the stuff, and the president of our company was a very high pressure man, and he let consultants come in. Literally, he had two or three finals, people who made the final resin come in to look at our process. Mm-hmm. They put everybody in the country in the business. They couldn't make it. Well, I left them then. I left them and went into a bronze business. Mm-hmm. And I left them, they had a 5-year backlog.
Wow.
And they finally ran it in the ground. Mm-hmm. But everybody else ran it in the ground.
Yeah, yeah.
But he had it and nobody else could make it. Mm-hmm. Just processing was what did it.
Mm-hmm.
And I went into a bronze business and stayed in there until 1972.
Now, who was the best first baseman you saw in your days?
George Sisler.
Without a doubt. Second baseman?
Charlie Gehringer.
Also. Shortstop?
I never saw the best shortstop. Pedro had one or two years, real good ones.
Yeah.
But the best shortstop I ever saw, I had him in Toronto. He was a Cuban. The name was Hector Rodriguez.
Oh, sure.
And everybody classed him as a third baseman. He couldn't play third.
That's right. He got to the White Sox. I saw him in Comiskey Park one night, boot three or four of them and lose a game.
That's right.
Yep.
He was the best shortstop I ever saw.
In this sense.
Ever.
But of the ones that played regularly?
Well, here, I'd say that Boudreau had two top years.
Yeah.
And he was hitting good.
You saw him as he started out.
I saw him as he started, but then...
Yeah.
His later years were best.
Yeah.
He was tremendous.
He was better than Cronin?
Oh, Cronin was an average fielder.
Yeah.
If he hadn't gotten to Boston, he'd have been rated as an average ball player. He got that fence out there. He just
hit it every time. Yeah. What about third base?
Ossie Bluzzi was the best third baseman ever. That's including Brooke Robinson and all of them.
Is that right?
Oh, yes. Nobody can compare him.
Wow. That's high praise.
Well, it's
true. Deserved, huh? How about three outfielders?
Well, I'd have to take Karp, Ruth, and Speaker.
Can't miss.
I didn't see the National League.
No, I understand that.
I saw Hornsby. I've seen a lot of good fielding shortstops.
Yeah. Who was the best right-handed hitter?
Well, I think probably the best right-hand hitter I saw in this league was Harry Hyman. But I guess you'd have to class Hornsby for what everyone
says. Yeah, overall, I mean, including National League, Hornsby would probably be the best.
That's right.
What about Jimmy Fox?
Jimmy was a good right-hand hitter.
Sure, Al was.
That's right.
And Al Simmons.
Well, Al wasn't as good a hitter as Jimmy, no. But they had this Philadelphia park, which was very favorable.
That's true. That's true.
Hyman was a tremendous
hitter. He really pounded that ball.
All the time.
What about the best catcher you ever saw? Other than yourself.
You're not like it. Look at that. This is a true story. We got out to a Boy Scout meeting in somewhere around Pasadena. We used to train out there. I got out one night. And they were trying to raise money for some project. And finally, I said to the boys, I said, tell you what I'll do. The boy that asked me the most interesting question said, I'll give him $5. And you can give half of it to your father. One little fellow sitting down in front, he sat there and just pondered and pondered. And they were asking about who was the best player here and there. Finally, this little kid held up his eyes. I said, what is it? And he says, who was the best catcher you ever saw? No, we're over the league, eh? Oh, no. Who was the best catcher in the league, and why are you?
He won the $5.
I said, son, you win, right?
Yeah.
That's great.
And, but well, anyway. I could out-catch Dickey and Cochran. There's no question about it. And I could out-throw them.
Yeah.
And I didn't hit with them.
No, that's right.
I couldn't hit with them, so. But
I couldn't tell you. It'd be hard for me to rate the best catcher I ever saw.
Was old Ray Schalk still catching when you came
in? Yes, Ray was a good defensive catcher.
Pretty good, I guess.
Yes, he was a good defensive catcher. Yeah. I guess he was, when he was in, you see, they didn't have those hard-hitting catchers.
That's right. That's
and they
right.
ranked him as the best defensive catcher and mm-hmm. put him in the Hall of Fame.
I have a question. What are your plans?
Thank you.
Yeah, they really love
him. Yeah. What about a left-handed pitcher?
A Grove.
Right-handed pitcher.
Well, it would be hard to name the... Grove was the best pitcher, all-around pitcher I ever saw while I was playing. But I saw Walter Johnson. He was on his way down. I could hit Walter, but I couldn't hit Grove.
Uh-huh.
But
Walter had had his best years.
He'd had them, yes. Yeah. But he could still pitch.
Yeah.
And I couldn't tell you who the best right-handed pitcher that stood out. Nobody stood out like Grove.
No, that's true. What about... designated hitter.
I think he took a lot away from baseball.
Certainly.
Yeah. Took all his strategy.
Yeah.
It just took strategy. You can't. Yeah. You could work the other club into a corner, you know.
Exactly.
But you can't anymore.
No.
No. You can't do it.
What about night ball?
It's a decided advantage.